Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1886 with a release date of October 4th, 2013, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. The FCC in shutdown. How will it affect ham radio? A new report says that faulty radio communications may have led to the deaths of 19 firefighters in Arizona. Hams in Pakistan stand ready to assist following devastating earthquakes. The IARU Administrative Council looks for ways to work with non-member societies. D-Star comes to 40 meters down under, and rappelling off a 367-foot hotel was all in a day's work for a California ham. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1886, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first and only independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from near Houston, Texas, here is Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
With the government shutdown that came into effect on October 1st, one of the many agencies affected is the FCC. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is in the newsroom and takes a look at how this will affect the United States world of amateur radio.
Until the government shutdown actually occurred on October 1st, no one was quite sure which FCC services required by amateur radio would be affected. A widely circulated FCC shutdown plan suggested only essential personnel mandated by law would remain on duty until the budget situation is resolved. Automated services, such as license processing and address changers, were unavailable as anyone who attempted to access the FCC's website on October 1st were quick to learn. The landing page at FCC.gov said in part, and we quote, "We regret the disruption, but during the federal government-wide shutdown, the FCC is limited to performing duties that are immediately necessary for the safety of life and the protection of property. FCC online services will not be available until further notice." After giving a short list of links to the canceled meetings and actions, the statement continued. Quote, "If you need to contact the FCC to address an emergency situation, please call area code 202-418-1122 or email fccopcenter@fcc.gov, end quote. The network outage reporting system remains open for telecommunications providers to report network outages. However, there is no way to access the ULS pages, no way to file license applications, no way to file updates or changes, or report rules violations. Simply put, the physical and electronic doors to the FCC are closed and won't reopen until Congress ends the budget impasse. Commission employees who remain on call are ready to act should there be an actual crisis. As many as 16 have been retained to handle emergencies, including staffing of the FCC's operations center and 8 others to conduct emergency level interference detection, mitigation, and disaster response operations. So the bottom line, if you're waiting for a license or other paperwork from the FCC to show up in your mailbox, you'll simply have to keep on waiting. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, in the newsroom in Los Angeles.
As this newscast goes to air, it's unknown how long it will take both sides of the political aisle to come to terms on this latest government funding crisis. On September 29th, a long magnetic filament in the sun's northern hemisphere erupted, producing what some observers are calling a magnificent coronal mass ejection. NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory, or SOHO, photographed the CME leaving the sun at a speed of close to 2 million miles per hour. Although the event was not aimed at our planet, it was expected to receive a glancing blow from the plasma cloud beginning on or about October 3rd. Keep an eye on spaceweather.com for the latest updates on this and other solar events that could impact on radio communications here on planet Earth. An investigation into the deaths of 19 firefighters in Arizona on June 30th has found that inadequate communications may have played a significant role in their fate. The dead men, all members of an elite unit called Granite Mountain Hotshots, died when they were overrun by a wildfire near the town of Yarnell. Amateur Radio Newsline's Mark Abramovich NT3V takes a look at what the report has to say.
It is a sobering and detailed report that investigators put together to try to ascertain what happened, why it happened, and to prevent a tragedy like this from happening again. Because there were no survivors, investigators relied on recordings of radio transmissions, eyewitness accounts of fire incident managers and neighboring crews, including pilots flying tankers dropping flame retardant and helicopter pilots. The report's key findings on communications, quote, radio communications were challenging throughout the incident. Some radios were not programmed with appropriate tone guards. Crews identified the problem, engaged in troubleshooting, and developed workarounds so they could communicate using their radios. And this telling conclusion, quote, radio traffic was heavy during critical times on the fire, unquote. Did it mean the hotshots trying to escape to what they thought was a nearby safe zone, a ranch, weren't able to cut in on the traffic? Here's more quoting from the 122-page investigation report. Quote, although much communication occurred among crews throughout the day, few people understood Granite Mountain's intentions, movements, and location once they left the black. Unquote. Now, the black is considered a safe zone. Quoting again from the report, the team believes this is due to brief, informal, and vague radio transmissions and talkarounds that can occur during wildland fire communications. Based on radio conversations, operations, and other resources had concluded that the Granite Mountain IHC was located in the black, near the ridgetop where they had started that morning. This resulted in confusion about the crew's actual location at the time of search and rescue. Unquote. Finally, the investigative team made some key recommendations to the state of Arizona and the National Wildfire Coordination Group. Among them, increasing resource tracking, communications, and real-time weather information, and putting together an interagency task force to conduct a further analysis of what happened, as well as examining the human factors and wildland fire communications. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mark Abramovich, NT3V.
The report describes radio communications during the time of the fire as being very challenging. The toll mounts in southwestern Pakistan after it was hit by a 7.7 scale earthquake on Tuesday, September 24th. Mituba Haider Imran, AP2MI, is the president of the Pakistan Relief. He says that government officials put the death toll at 349 and rising. Other news sources put the number of deaths so far at 515, with more than 600 injured. Few of the mud and homemade brick houses in the area survived. Since then, tens of thousands of people have been sleeping under the open sky or in tents. The disaster took place in a remote and thinly populated area. Pakistan Amateur Radio Society members say that they are prepared to provide any emergency communications support as needed. AP2MUT is already on the scene and involved with gathering information on the devastation and needed relief supplies. Pakistan Relief has so far donated 2,500 jerry cans, 1,500 mosquito nets, an unknown number of first aid kits, and other essential equipment. The coordination process is underway with the Pakistan Air Force to airlift and drop these goods in the worst hit areas. A second 7.2 magnitude earthquake in the same region on the 28th caused further damage to the region's infrastructure. The International Amateur Radio Union Administrative Council is looking into ways to work with non-IARU amateur radio organizations in nations where the IARU member society may not be representing all of that country's radio amateurs. The issue came under discussion at the annual IARU Administrative Council meeting held September 21st to the 23rd in Cancun, Mexico. According to a news release from the gathering, in many of these countries, there are other non-IARU member societies. The Administrative Council is studying ways to work with the non-IARU societies to ensure that the interests of all the amateurs are represented in those countries where the IARU member society fails to do so. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the Peak Radio Association repeaters of Corvallis, Oregon. An Indianapolis area ham has been arrested after he was allegedly spotted pretending to be a cop at the funeral of a police officer who was being laid to rest. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jack Parker, W8ISH, has the details.
News of the death of an Indianapolis police officer shot and killed while responding to a domestic dispute made headlines all last week, but on the afternoon of his funeral, another man in uniform stole the headlines. As law enforcement officers, friends, family, and media gathered at the cemetery, another man in blue was arrested for impersonating a police officer. As it turns out, these two men had more in common than first thought. They are both Indianapolis-based amateur radio operators. Arrested is 38-year-old Min Van Nguyen, call sign KB9WDY. He was arrested as he waited with Westside residents and other police officers as the miles-long funeral procession neared the Westside District Headquarters where deceased officer Rod Bradway was assigned. Rod Bradway was killed last week while attempting to save a woman and a child from an armed domestic partner. Bradway's amateur radio call sign is KC9PFW. Authorities don't believe the two men knew each other. The police badge and uniform was the common link to this sad commentary. According to the arrest report, police say Nguyen was taking photographs from a black 2012 Dodge Charger equipped with a siren, flashing lights, and two-way radio. Police found an AR-15 rifle in his car and later found guns, police uniforms, and police equipment at his home. Nguyen has had prior arrest on similar and other unusual behavior. The report said Nguyen had property stolen from the city of Indianapolis, including property room slips and envelopes that the public doesn't have access to. Min Van Nguyen faces felony charges for impersonating a public servant and theft, which carries a sentence of 6 months to 3 years in prison. The conviction could lead to a revocation of his amateur radio license by the FCC if they choose to review the case. Reporting from Indianapolis, this is Jack Parker, W8ISH.
The public and law enforcement officers were not aware of the Nguyen arrest until after Officer Rod Bradway, KC9PFW, was laid to rest following a full honor ceremony at Crown Hill Cemetery on Indianapolis's north side. The FCC has proposed a $12,000 fine and a shorter license renewal term for Gallup Public Radio, this based on some missing documents from its public file. New Mexico station KGLP-FM admitted it was missing nearly 6 years' worth of issues and programs lists from the file. In its reply to the FCC, the station indicated it has now reconstructed the missing documents. However, the FCC's media bureau said in its decision the station was still responsible for the lapse. The commission found the violations to be extensive, occurring for nearly 6 years of an 8-year license term. For that reason, the agency raised the proposed monetary forfeiture from the base $10,000 to $12,000 and also granted the station a shortened 4-year license renewal term. Gallup Public Radio was given the usual 30 days from imposition of the fine to pay the amount in full or to file a further appeal. If you have interest in digital audio on the high frequency bands, you might want to tune your D-Star equipped transceiver to 7.215 MHz at noon UTC to see if you can take part in a D-Star test net operating from Australia most mornings. The net control is Brian Farrar, VK2AH, who says the best contacts so far have been from his location to the city of Horsham, about 550 miles away. Farrar says that net participants have tried other bands with not much success, but 40 meters seems promising. VK2AK is not only on for the net, but also tries 40-meter D-Star at other times of the day as well. While operating, he also monitors D-Star reflector REF003 and does put out alerts when he is looking for D-Star contacts from his QTH down under. The president of Serbia has traveled to the United States, where he recently unveiled the Nikola Tesla monument at Tesla's former laboratory in Long Island. In a press statement prior to the actual ceremony, Serbian President Tomislav Nikolic said the strength of Tesla's vision is what influences how the public speaks about Nikola Tesla with respect some 70 years after his passing. Nikola Tesla was a Serbian and later naturalized American inventor, electrical engineer, mechanical engineer, physicist, and futurist. He is perhaps best known for his contributions to the design of the modern alternating current electricity supply system. Tesla passed away on January 7, 1943. For decades, the Tesla Science Center has been trying to set up a commemorative museum at the site of Nikola Tesla's old laboratory. Those behind the project managed to raise over $1 million in an internet crowdfunding campaign. Now they can celebrate the fact that their goal is finally starting to become a reality. A new exhibit highlighting the Radio Corporation of America's rich history across the 20th century will open shortly at the College of New Jersey in Ewing Township. The display will draw from the more than 6,000 artifacts that the college inherited after the David Sarnoff Library closed in 2009. At one time, the Sarnoff Library was RCA's main technical archive and museum. The new exhibition covers the development of radio, television, and broadcasting, as well as RCA's work in liquid crystal displays, electron microscopy, solid-state physics, and computers. The Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers Foundation funded the new Sarnoff Study Center, which is connected to the exhibition. The center will serve as the central educational component of the Sarnoff collection. More is on the web at tinyurl.com/RCA-exhibit. A new laterally diffused metal oxide semiconductor, or LDMOS-type field effect transistor, designated as type BLF578XR, was developed by NXP Semiconductor. This for use as an RF power amplifier in broadcast and industrial applications. The new device is rated at 1400 watt output, 50 volts DC, with a gain of 23.5 dB and an efficiency of 69%. Even more amazing, it is designed to survive a 125 to 1 or higher VSWR, and as such, it is literally almost indestructible. The current price of a single unit BLF578XR transistor is 230 euros, or about $300 US. But like most semiconductors, it should come down in price over time. Some names in the news. First up this week is Gordon Adams, G3LEQ, whom after 35 years of unbroken service is to retire as manager of the Radio Society of Great Britain's GB2RS Bulletin Broadcast Service. The Society says that GB2RS has always been a much valued part of its news service, and every week nearly 100 volunteer newsreaders give of their time to broadcast the material to all parts of the UK. According to the RSGB, Adams has agreed to continue in his post until a successor is found. British telecommunications regulator Ofcom has announced the appointment of Philip Marnick as its new group director in charge of Spectrum. Marnick comes to the agency with 27 years' experience in the wireless communications industry, including a stint at UK Broadband, where he served as chief technology officer. He will join Ofcom in November and will lead the Spectrum Policy Group. This is the organization's arm responsible for setting and implementing the strategy for managing spectrum, which involves clearing, awarding, and licensing it. CQ Communications has announced that effective immediately, John Coomer, WA2OJK, has been appointed to head the company's advertising department. Coomer is no stranger to CQ or to many in the hobby radio industry. In years past, WA2OJK sold advertising for CQ Amateur Radio, Popular Communications, and World Radio Online, as well as Modern Electronics and Electronic Servicing and Technology, when the latter were CQ publications. John Coomer may be reached by email at john.coomer, spelled K-U-M-M-E-R, at cqcom.com, or by phone to 516-883-1641 during normal weekday hours Eastern Time. NASA astronauts Gregory Chamatoff, KD5PKZ, and Ronald Guerin, KF5GPO, are leaving the agency. Chamatoff is joining the faculty of Texas A&M University in College Station, Texas, and the University of Sydney in Australia. Guerin has said that he plans to work on a range of new entrepreneurial and humanitarian efforts. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio News Line with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. The technologist who literally invented electronic noise reduction has passed away. This with word that Dolby Laboratories founder Dr. Ray Dolby died September 12th at his home in San Francisco at age 80. Early in his career, Ray Dolby was employed by Ampex Corporation, where he was chief designer of the electronic aspects of the first practical videotape recording system. In 1965, he founded Dolby Laboratories, whose major accomplishments include the development of electronic noise reduction and surround sound technologies. According to a company spokesperson, in recent years, Ray Dolby had been suffering from Alzheimer's disease. Then, last July, he was diagnosed with an acute form of leukemia. Ray Dolby is survived by his wife, Dagmar, his sons, Tom and David, and their spouses. A celebration of his life will be held at a later date. The family asks that, in lieu of flowers, donations be made to the Alzheimer's Association, 1060 La Avenida Street, Mountain View, California, 94043, or the Brain Health Center, care of CPMC Foundation, 45 Castro Street, San Francisco, California, 94117. Keep an ear open early next year for members of the Danish Radio Amateurs Group as they activate the special event call sign 5P14EHC. This station will be operational throughout January of 2014 in celebration of Denmark hosting the European Handball Championship for Men. Look for operation of 5P14EHC to be on all bands, including the 30, 17, and 12-meter bands. Activity will likely encompass all modes available, but will exclude cross-mode, cross-band contacts, and those made via repeater, repeater interties, and echolink. All QSOs will be verified electronically via Logbook of the World and eQSL. Paper QSLs will also be available. In DX, the Martello Tower Group is returning to Herm Island from October 4th to the 9th using the call sign GP0PKT. Their operation will be 80 through 10 meters, including the WARC bands, using SSB and RITI. Although Herm is part of the Guernsey Islands on the air group, it isn't activated very often, and the GP0 prefix usually attracts some interest. All QSOs will be uploaded to Logbook of the World. Direct or bureau cards should be sent via G6NHU. K7ZO will be active from Nicaragua during the CQ Worldwide DX SSB contest from October 26th to the 27th as a single operator all-band entry using the call sign YN5Z. QSL to K7ZO direct via the bureau or electronically using Logbook of the World. DJ7RJ will be on Reunion Island signing stroke FR until November 2nd. Listen out for him on 160 through 10 meters SSB and CW with a focus on the lower bands. QSL via DJ7RJ, either direct or via the bureau. WP3A will be active as ED8P from Santa Cruz de Tenerife in the Canary Islands, also during the CQ Worldwide DX SSB contest. He will enter as a single operator, 15-meter, single-band, low-power assisted entry. His QSLs go via NP3O. DL4VM will be operating stroke OZ when he returns to North Jutland. He will be there through October 19th. QSL via DL4VM, either direct or via the bureau. DK8LRF is reportedly operational from Colombia as HK3JCL through November 23rd. His activity will mostly be on 20 and 40 meters using SSB. QSL to his home call sign via the bureau. And finally this week, it's not every ham that gets to rappel down the side of a 35-story landmark, but it was all in a day's work on Friday, September 27th for Tony Butita, KD6AJG. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, has the rest of the story.
By profession, Tony Butita, KD6AJG, is a news photographer for KTTV Fox 11 Television. He is also a member of the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department Search and Rescue Team. So when reporter Bob DeCastro decided to walk down the side of the Westin Bonaventure Hotel to raise money for the Boy Scouts of America through the Los Angeles Council Over the Edge 4 rappelling demonstration, Tony, who is fully trained and qualified in this area, was a natural to accompany him down the side of the building.
Yeah, the station asked me if I would be interested in being part of that, and I was really excited. I just couldn't wait to do it, so I was like, yeah, no problem.
Oh, yes. In addition to going along for the 367-foot vertical walk, Tony had another duty, That was to bring some live television pictures of both of them as they made their way down.
I've done lots of rappels and, you know, come out of helicopters and mountains and stuff like that, and that kind of stuff doesn't bother me. I'm real comfortable with my skill level as far as that goes. But the night before this, couldn't sleep. I was just trying to figure out all the technical part of it, how to do all this and put it on live TV.
We asked Tony to tell us a bit about the technology involved to make it all happen. It turned out to be rather complex.
Lots of microwave links, some new technology using broadband, live view, it's called, in a backpack. And so we had a camera on the roof on the reporter going back via live view broadband technology. I had a GoPro on my head, and then in the backpack I had all kinds of converters so we could get the audio into the GoPro, and then a portable microwave link on one frequency that was bouncing from my back up to the rooftop where we dangled some receive antennas over the side. And then from that output of that receiver into another transmitter, which was hitting Saddle Peak where the station would pick us up. And then in addition to all those microwave links and broadband, we had our helicopter on another microwave frequency hovering right over us. So it quite a bit going on, and actually on the air it all cut together seamlessly, no problem.
And did he enjoy the experience?
Oh, I had a blast. I my responsibility was to try to keep the reporter in frame, and shooting on the GoPro stuck to your head, you really never know where you're pointing. If I could do it again, I probably would have liked to have done a test and just kind of see what the shot looked like. I was able to get him in there quite a bit and try to keep up with him, and try to stay level with him. I wish I could do it again and make a few changes to the camera, but for the most part, I did okay. I got some good stuff, and it was fun, that's for sure.
If you want to know what it's like to venture 367 feet down the side of the Westin Bonaventure Hotel, you can do so vicariously. That's because Bob and Tony's walk was televised live on the station's Good Day LA morning program, and it's online at tinyurl.com/rappel-over-the-edge. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW in Los Angeles.
And one more thing. While we're not 100% sure, it appears as if KD6AJG may have inadvertently become a sort of a record holder. This is being the first ham radio operator to ever rappel down the side of the Westin Bonaventure Hotel, even though he had no way to get on the amateur radio airwaves at the time. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, Twit TV, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at arnewsline.org. You can also write us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, near Houston, Texas, saying 7-3, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2013, all rights reserved.